Hi there, and welcome back to the Energy Sector Heroes podcast. My name is Michelle Fraser, and every week I will speak with incredible people who share their lessons, experiences, and stories from their time spent in the energy sector. Hi there, and welcome back again to this week's episode. If you're new to the show, then please take a second to subscribe and even consider sharing this show with just one other person. This week, I am joined by Maysong Yan. Maysong is an incredible principal reservoir consultant. Maysong, would you like to introduce yourself, please?
Yes. First of all, Michelle, really appreciated this opportunity to be with you on this broadcast. And like I said just now, you are in UK, I'm in United States, and technology shortened our distance. And I have worked in the oil and gas industry for more than 20 years, and currently a consultant on the reservoir engineering side.
So how did you get started in the oil and gas industry?
That's a very good question. I was thinking about it yesterday because my technical background is chemical engineering, really downstream in on the refineries. But when I graduated in 2000 from Texas Tech in Texas, United States, the oil and gas industry was booming at that time. So I did not find a lot of chemical engineering refinery downstream opportunities, but upstream was looking for people to join. And they did not have enough petroleum engineering graduates due to the downturn of the industry in the past 10 to 20 years. So basically, my manager said, if you are an engineering students graduated with a good score in the university, we have, and you're willing to learn to join our industry, we're willing to train. That's how I got into upstream in industry.
Okay, that sounds interesting. Did you have a lot of training to do when you first started in the industry?
Yes. Not a whole lot of, it's more like a graduate process, like a couple of projects, a year. And during while doing those projects, I'm picking up those upstream knowledge and experience. Also, I was very confident at that time because regardless is upstream and the downstream, the basic principles are same. Math, chemistry, physics, I'm good at all three. So I thought like, okay, tell me what's the mechanism behind those operations. And then I get it. It's not difficult at all.
Okay. What is the most interesting thing about being a reservoir engineer?
Most interesting thing part is I learned to put a dollar sign in the project I'm doing. So basically, as an engineer, the interesting part is we need to learn, or we need to be good at it, to show people the value of our projects. Because a lot of people we were talking about our project at that time, they don't have much of technical or subsurface experience, but they are very good at of the financial side, how to persuade them to understand the value of the project, start to support my project is quite critical.
Okay. So did you have any role models during your career, and what did you find inspirational about them?
Oh, there are a lot of role models, or I call them mentors. So I mentioned in my book, their background are not exactly subsurface either. They are very successful in the upstream, and they could organize a good team to make a challenging project successful. I mentioned a few. One would be my manager in Schlumberger, Yunus Jalali. He is the one kind of encouraged me or motivated me to be a reservoir engineer. His background is petroleum engineering in Stanford. And currently, I'm writing this book also because he wrote several books, not on the oil and gas industry, but other aspects. But I thought, oh, okay, maybe I could write a book too and write down what I observed, what I think, share with the people. And he reviewed my book and really gave me good support and encouragement to publish it.
Okay, so do you find it hard to write a book?
Yes and no. It's not hard to write something, but to make it a book, to make it like a storyline, is quite a challenge. And because writing a book is not my first goal or primary goal, so I drag it till 2023, this year, to finish it.
Okay. What was the most outstanding point you found when you were writing your book?
Interesting fact, there are two interesting parts. I feel it's kind of intriguing people to read. One is the negative WTI in April 2020 when we had a pandemic. This is the first time I found out that a commodity could go to negative value, not because of the technical issue, but more on the financial side, because it's a short in the Wall Street, on the Wall Street. So that's part of kind of opened up my eye during the pandemic. Another one is in 2023, I know a lot of people were talking about the possible economic recession, and more like a worldwide part. Then I thought that during the pandemic, the commodity price was low. Before the pandemic, the commodity price was low, and it's kind of the oil and gas industry was hit by this low commodity price, is a downturn. Then we thought we could recover. Then we had a pandemic right away, and it's like a double hit in this industry. And maybe other industry could learn from us how we feel through this difficult time.
Okay. Do you think that the pandemic has changed the way we work in the oil and gas industry?
Yes. Before pandemic, we already talked about the smart well, intelligent completion, digital oil field. So, but it's still very slowly. People will think, okay, we know how to do things. But now, after pandemic, digitalization in the oil field is accelerated way faster than before. One, and the people are more open to the digital and the remote work right now.
Yeah, but then I know in the UK, a lot of people are back to work full time. Is that still the same in the United States? Or is people still working remotely?
Here, I think people are taking approach more like a hybrid approach. So people start to work full-time in the office, but then they realize that working at home may not necessarily reduce the productivity. Also, they save the time on commute. I'm not so sure which part of UK you stay right now. I know the traffic in London was really not so pleasant, the commute. And so it's a trade-off. But we also realized that there's no way to remote all the time, the whole year. So a lot of companies are taking a hybrid approach. You work from home 2 or 3 days per week. The rest of work days, you go to office.
Oh, yeah. I think that's quite common, quite a lot of places. But there is some companies that are back to the office 100%.
Oh, yes. Some companies, they firmly demand you need to go to office every day.
Yeah, that's right. Do you think it's better working at home or working in the office?
I would think I like a hybrid mode because I want to focus on my work when I stay at home. But going to the office, I can talk with my co-workers, my teammates. And that's more like a team building, much easier in the in-person environment than working together to solve a complex project. Under a team environment is easier too.
Okay, thank you. What is the most challenging thing about your current role?
The role as a consultant or as a writer?
As a consultant.
The challenging part for me right now is still developing the projects. My sense, which may not be exactly right, the oil field activities haven't recovered to pre-pandemic level yet, at least in United States. I'm not so sure about the UK. Maybe you can tell me what you think or your experience, your observations on UK side. But here is recovering. It's still slow, so it's still very challenging for me to get a project.
Yeah, I think it's the same everywhere. So I think there's a lot of countries the same. I think projects are coming, but they're still quite slow to get up and started again. Because there was a lot of projects that were put on hold during the pandemic. So a lot of them have to be started up again, I think.
That's the same observation I had on my side, yeah. And I think also because people or the leadership in the corporates is worried, is concerned about the possible economic recession. So they want to hold the cash. They don't want to invest everything they have. One, secondly, is it's difficult for the fossil fuel industry to get the loan or the capex. They could get 10 years ago.
Yeah, I think so too, especially because we're going into the zero emissions. So there's maybe less projects to do with the building new platforms and things.
You are exactly right. The only part I saw is relatively booming right now is the CO2 sequestration projects.
Okay. There are still quite a few projects going about, but they're very few and far between. There's more coming
up.
There's more coming up, but they're just really slow.
Exactly. Exactly.
So did you always want to be an engineer, or did you want to do anything else different when you were younger?
That's a very good question. I never thought I would do something else in my school year, and I'm very good at math, and my dad always wanted me to be an engineer. So because in his opinion, using technical skill set is kind of a way his kids could make a living, make a good living, regardless of other situations. So he always encouraged us to take an engineering role.
Okay, that's interesting. So did you find it hard to get into, to find a job in an engineering role when you were much younger, when you were starting out?
Not really. I think because not enough Okay, so that's my personal observation. When I worked in oil and gas industry more than 20 years ago, so if it's a 10-person meeting in a meeting room, so in a meeting room, 10 professionals to have a conference, typically I'm the only female engineer there, typically one or two. But right now, more female engineers, more female scientists join the industry. I'm so happy for the change. At that time, I think United States are, our industry was pushing for the diversity in the oil field. One criteria would be have more female professionals, female workers in the oil field. So I've never had any issue to work in the oil field as a female employee.
Okay. Do you find it hard being one of the very few female engineers?
It is. That's a strange, I had sometimes had a perspective, again, as a female employee in the oil field. Some people will say, they say, oh, you are welcome, you are so good. But at the same time, they may doubt, in their deep heart, they may doubt your true ability as an engineer. They say, you got in maybe because we want to have more female engineers. So I have to work harder to prove my ability, prove my skill set than typical male engineers.
Do you really think that? I agree that women have to work harder, I think.
To prove ourselves.
Yeah, to prove yourself. Yes.
And I did.
Yes, I know, because you're hugely successful.
But thank you so much.
Did you find it quite difficult to prove yourself? How did you go about proving yourself?
It is a little difficult because I'm more like an introvert person, and I'm not that aggressive, my quote unquote aggressive. So, but in the oil field, you need to present yourself, stick to the value you have, stick to the theory you used or the design you prepared for the oil field development. And then you know you're right. You want to persuade a bunch of your co-workers on those who may doubt your ability to conduct engineering analysis. So that, and I'm not used to be aggressive. So that's, I was more silent before, but now I learn how to open up, understand what they were thinking about the presentations, the designs I had, find the niche point to persuade them.
Okay. So how do you persuade them then to that your designs are correct and that what work you've done is as good, if not better, than what they've produced?
Because it could be... Yeah, that's a good question. First, understand what's their concern, because ultimately we work as a team and we want the success of this project. We want to add value to the client, to the oil field, or add value to that asset. So, solid design and tell them exactly the theory and the cases behind my design and show the previous successful stories.
Okay. Is there anything you still want to achieve in your career?
That's a very good question. I want to spend more time to understand the machine learning, the artificial intelligence in the oil field. I'm trying to learn this area and want to bring those new technology, new concept, the high-tech part in the oil field. That's the goal I have in the next 3 to 5 years.
Okay. Do you think that the AI will change how we work in the oil and gas industry? for the energy sector?
It wouldn't change the way we should do things right. It's just make us to develop the field more efficient, more effective, and more productive.
Okay. How do you think that?
Because for the mature field I worked before, in one field, you could have several hundred wells. Each well produce that many data, production data, could have a well log data, pressure data, and some other data every day. We don't have time. As one engineer, I don't have time to read all the data, go through all the data. So machine learning, AI, could help me to accelerate my working pace and help me just identify those critical parts or critical wells I need to look into, the problematic wells I need to look into. And the rest of wells, if they are running, they are operated as normal, then let it go at that day until we want to make some change or until they have problems.
Okay. So do you think it'll be easier to identify problems?
Yes, it will be quicker to identify problems with, I call it augmented intelligence. It's AI with human intelligence together solve the problem quicker, identify the issues quicker, solve the problem quicker.
Okay, I do agree that. I think that AI will need to be, the future of the energy sector, I think it will be a combination of human intelligence plus the AI as well.
Because yes,
the AI can cut down so much time analyzing so many different things in the oil field.
Yeah. Another one we have been using long time ago, AI is not new to us. Now we just get high tech companies' involvement show us those machine learning technologies. But we used kind of AI before, like a predictive maintenance, like a rod pump. We have a dynamometer card. And by reading that card, look at the shape of that plot or pattern on that card, we know what could happen in the subsurface. So I feel then we can do some predictive maintenance to prevent it happen before. So it's more like prepare the field for anything it could happen, rather than like a firefighter go to the fire blew out, then we engineers like a firefighter go there and put down the fire. That's not the right way.
You don't think so? Because as an engineer, especially working in operations and maintenance, you have a lot of firefighting every day. So what is the most difficult problem that you've resolved as an engineer?
That's interesting. I haven't found out that anything is difficult. I found all of them are interesting projects for me to solve. Most difficult part is persuade leadership to spend money for the field development.
Yep, I hear you. I do agree with that one. But how would you go about persuading them to go about to take on the project then that you've been working on?
Need to show the dollar sign. So basically, need to tell them that, okay, if you spend that much of money and you have a good possibility, because no one can guarantee 100% success rate in the oil field subsurface domain. So you have a good chance. What's the successful rate based on the past history and to recover the cost plus the profit? That's why I said as a reservoir engineer, I need to know the financial side of the industry. Use that dollar amount, that financial term to persuade the leadership, persuade the stakeholders to invest on this project.
Okay, interesting. So if you were going to hire someone, what would you look for?
I would look for some junior engineers who could help me to work on some relatively simple projects, one. And I will look for my people who could provide engineering support, geology support in other disciplines like drilling, completion, the production, and petrophysics, geophysics. So that I could provide an integrated subsurface study and an integrated solution for the field development.
Okay, so what kind of skills would they have then to work with you as a reservoir engineer?
Basic subsurface knowledge plus an attitude to learn, to explore, to self-motivated. That's pretty much, I think, a little bit like what my managers looked into when I first joined the industry. You don't have to be so experienced, but you need to, you have a good engineering science or basic knowledge, then you have a good attitude to learn to, and a self-motivated, a self-starter.
Okay. That sounds like really good skills, actually, that you would have to have. Have you ever encountered any career disasters, and how have you handled them?
Yes. When I first joined Schlumberger, I worked on the fiber optic distributed sensor project. Actually, the counterpart or our competitors was from UK, Sensa. Very interesting. So after a while, we did our research work, R&D work in United States under the big umbrella of Schlumberger. Schlumberger decided to buy Sensa. Then our group is not needed anymore. There are two options. We need to go to UK to be part of Sensa and still under the big umbrella of Schlumberger, or we go to other groups. I'm very new in the oil field. I don't have a whole lot of experience to persuade other managers to hire me. Also, I had the visa issue because I only have a working visa in United States. I don't have any visa in UK. So it's a lot of hassle for Schlumberger at that time. So that's probably one of the life crises I had.
Okay. So nothing too major.
Right now, when I look back, I feel it's nothing that serious. I solved the issue. I was lucky because the industry was booming. They still need engineers. So I also opened myself. I myself became more aggressive and stop by other managers' office and introduce myself to them and ask them whether they have opportunities for me. But at that time, I remembered I couldn't sleep well at night because I don't know what's next. I'm only one in my family in United States, and they know nothing. My families in China knew nothing about my situation and couldn't help me either. So it's hard, but I was lucky. The industry was booming. The managers I talked to, they are very helpful. They are willing to help.
No, I know. But it must be quite hard to go to managers and ask them if they have opportunities for you.
Exactly.
Not a lot of people would do that.
Yeah, to me, it's I was more introvert, more quieter at that time. some managers, I remember one manager told me that you don't have to worry. The Schlumberger could find a job for you. You need to just focus on your work. I feel so touched by him.
That's good. But do you think that you've had to change your personality to become more aggressive to really progress in the energy sector?
I feel so, especially as a female engineer. I need to be more aggressive than my counterpart, my peers.
How do you find that, though? Because I actually do identify with that as well. You have to find a balance between being quite aggressive and still quite feminine as well. It can be
yes, I remembered, and I do get good tips from some senior female engineers. You know, in each corporate, those bigger ones, they have like a woman in Schlumberger in this location, in that location, like a woman in Chevron, woman in BP. So some senior female engineers sometimes give us some good support and give us some teachers or share their experience, how they did it. That's a big report system I had in those corporates. I remember one senior female engineer told us that when she joined the industry in oil field, and she was taught like just like a woman, speak like a man, work like a dog to survive in the oil field.
I do agree, but how do you get around that? It is really hard to be seen and heard, actually, as a female engineer.
Eventually, I think my co-workers will recognize my skill side. It's difficult at the beginning, but eventually, once they recognize your working ethic, the value you could bring in to them, to the project, they start to accept you, and then they start to show the respect.
Okay. But it takes a long time, though, doesn't it?
Yes.
It can take a long time. It can take years, actually.
Exactly. May take years. Then when you go to a different project, you already have a tracking record of success.
Yeah, but still some people are looking over their shoulder to make sure that you see what you're doing, see if you slip up.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's good that we have survived all that to become quite successful.
Yes.
What is your zone of genius? What are you most good at?
What I'm good at? I think now I'm more well-rounded. I'm not just a reservoir engineer. I know some finance concept that can be applied to my project. I know better on the communication. I know better to present my idea and persuade my team or get buy-in from the stakeholders. I think also I know that regardless what will happen, I'm good. I'm prepared to deliver good result for my project.
That's excellent. Excellent. So how would you describe your typical working week?
So there are two types of working weeks I have. One is when I have a project, I need to focus because each project is different and my client will have a different objective. And so I typically spend more than 8 hours per day to do the project when I have a project because a lot of them have some timeline deliverables I need to strictly follow. So that's the time I need to make sure I manage my time right. Working some other week, the project hasn't come yet, and I can more relax. I can focus on the linking, my friends, and my kids, my families, and pick learn something new if I have time and enjoy with friends to go out. So there are two different type of week I have.
Okay, sounds interesting. So, okay, because a reservoir engineer is quite important. So what kind of activities do you do as a reservoir engineer?
There are two types of projects I have been working on. One is the technical support, purely subsurface technical support. Do a better reservoir management, increase the well productivity, find out the issues of the subsurface operation, and based on the geology, reservoir fluid, how we can improve the well's production. So, and how to further develop this field by infill drilling, by workover, by refracking, by next step recovery mechanism, like from primary to secondary to tertiary. So this is one purely technical support. Another one is more on the field asset evaluation. So with current production in this field and the production history, if the client want to buy to sell this asset, what's a fair market value for this asset? And I put a dollar sign there. And I typically put the upside potential and the downside risk to ensure it's a 360 investigation of this field.
Okay, so what do you prefer? What type of work do you prefer doing then?
So, two type of work: technical and A&D, acquisition and diversity too.
Okay, thank you. What motivates you to keep going when things get tough?
Because this industry is really cyclical. So, when I joined the industry, people told me that those senior guys told me that I need to learn how to hold my breath beneath the water and long enough and survive. So when the water line go lower, that means the industry get recovered and then I can enjoy. So it's more, I know it wouldn't be a downturn forever. Based on the supply and the demand, when industry is in downturn, the supply will be cut gradually, deeper and deeper. Then eventually, supply is way shorter than the demand. Then the industry will boom.
Okay, so when you have like a downturn, how do you deal with that? Because it'll be stressful. It'll be stressful for everybody who's...
Yes, then that's the time. That's the time to have a good and report system from friends, from friends, from families, from, and also from myself. Build some hobbies and interest to enjoy the life.
Yeah, I agree, actually. Because a downturn doesn't last forever.
No, it's not. And prepare myself during the downturn. Like during the pandemic, I took some online classes. And amazing. That's also a silver lining of this pandemic. A lot of educational institution and college, university, they opened their online resources to the public. Like I took a statistic class from Stanford. I took a contract law class from Harvard. And they are all free.
Okay. That's amazing. That is quite amazing, actually. When you're going in your career, and you might be that in your, you could be career for a downturn. So it might not affect you so badly.
Well, then that's the time to need the support from my previous partners, the partners, business partners from my previous projects. They know I'm good, then they could still provide me some projects, not like the amount I had before during the industry booming time, but enough for me to survive.
Okay.
And also, I still have the habit of keep a good reserve during the good time to so prepare myself for the rainy days.
Yeah, because so the message is learn your trade. Try and do as much as you can to learn as much skills as you can so you can diversify if you need to, I think so.
You're exactly right. That's how I feel digitalization is the next big trend, or artificial intelligence is the next big trend in the industry, machine learning, data management. And another thing to survive the downturn is being flexible, keep learning, understand the trend of the industry, prepare yourself ahead of your peers.
I think that's actually really good advice, actually. Keep ahead of the technology and make sure that you're up to date with all the latest going on in your industry, I think. Especially
exactly.
Yeah.
So when the industry realizes that's the right approach, right direction, they're looking for the people and you are right there ahead of your peer.
Yeah, you need to be able to stand out, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. Any skill that can make you stand out is a good thing, I think.
Exactly.
I think in engineering just now, I think after you leave university, I think your learning just starts. It's not like you leave university and you think, whew, I passed, that's my last of my learning. I think your learning just starts after university. Because your degree, and I'm not going to say that it's not useful, but it is very useful because it's a basic fundamental knowledge and learning that you have. But what you learn in university, you use some. I'm not going to say that you don't. But you still need to learn a lot of different skills, actually, after leaving university. Your training and your learning just starts right after university.
Yep. I also understand better on it's never too old to learn. Right now, I'm still learning new skill sets.
Me too, actually. So if you could turn back time, would you change anything?
That's a very interesting perspective. People always ask themselves, if I have a second chance, would I do better? And I ask myself that question too. I think I will make a similar, not better, not worse decision, even I had a second chance, because my decision was made based on my expertise or my perspective at that time. Until I change my perspective, I will make a different decision. Otherwise, I will stick to the similar route I would go.
I really like that answer, actually. I do. It's really clever.
Yeah, because people say, if I have a second chance, I can make that decision. When you go back to if you have a time machine, go back to that time. Until your knowledge, your perspective, your experience are significantly different, you make a different decision. Otherwise, you will make a similar decision. Because each decision are made based on the best judgment you had at that time.
That's excellent, actually. Excellent advice.
That's give me a feeling that so that helped me during the downturn. Why? It wouldn't make me feel guilty or ashamed about the decision I made before. It only tell me that I need to look forward. I need to do better. Look at the present time, how to make myself better, make a better decision right now, rather than regret the decision I made before. I'm not looking back to learn from it, but I wouldn't regret the decision I made. I just need to understand why I made that decision. What else I need to do to make a better decision next time? Look forward.
I agree. That's all the questions I have for today. I would like to thank Mei Song for your time. That brings us to the end of another episode. Thanks for listening and see you next week. That brings us to the end of another episode. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, I'd like to gently encourage you to leave a 5-star rating wherever you listen to podcasts and share the show with another person. You can also follow me on LinkedIn or via my website, www.michellefraserconsultancy.com. Thanks again for listening and see you next week.